Welcome to The Savage Truth with Cicely Davis. I am your host, Cicely Davis.
Welcome back, American Savages, to The Savage Truth. I am your host, Cicely Davis. Thank you so much for joining me. I absolutely love what I do. I love having you join me. Thank you for making the decision to join me today. If you're new to the channel, welcome. You made a great decision. I am appreciative of you making the decision to pop in, hear my take on what's happening in this amazing country of ours. For those of you who are the loyalists, the ride or dies, those of you who tune in on a regular basis, you are the reason why I do this. I appreciate your support. Wouldn't want to do this without you. Thank you so very much. Now, I have a message, whether you're new or returning, and it is this. It's an ask, actually, to please like, share, subscribe, and leave a positive review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. And thank you to those platforms for supporting me. Please leave a positive review on those platforms. And let's get into today's haps. What's going on? We need to report it. We're talking about Harvard. Now, you know, you all know, for those of you who are returning, the loyalists, you all know that I love the Jewish people, right? I'm in support of the Jewish people. I have the bestest of friends that are Jewish. And, you know, we have the same God. Oh, love my Jewish people. But we need to start with the video because this is what got me all riled up this week. Let's hear about some Ivy League hypocrisy. Go ahead and play it, Rick.
The Trump administration is ordering the freeze of $2.2 billion in federal funding for Harvard. This after the Ivy League school said it would not comply with the president's request for policy changes over anti-Semitism. Harvard alum and New York Congresswoman Lee Stefanik is praising the move from the White House.
President Trump correctly made the correct decision to defund these institutions. If you look at what they required for Harvard, it was protection of Jewish students. It is making sure that we are getting rid of DEI, which by definition is anti-Semitic. And instead, Harvard is acting more entitled than ever. U.S. taxpayer dollars should never be propping up anti-Semitism.
So, Shabbos Kastenbaum graduated from Harvard about a year ago. And good morning to you, Shabbos. Thanks for coming back here in America's Newsroom. I want to show you the demands. They're very similar to Columbia from a couple months back. They include the governance and leadership reforms, discontinue DEI, as you just heard from the Congresswoman, implement a mask ban, which has been a big demand for some of these Ivy League schools.
Oh, so now Harvard wants to fight the government. After years of rolling over for every left-wing cause, censoring free speech, and bending the knee to every activist demand under the sun, the moment President Donald J. Trump steps in to protect Jewish students, suddenly Harvard rediscovers its rebellious streak. The same institution that couldn't seem to find its voice when anti-Semitic protests were erupting on the campus, right? Vandalism, disruption, blocking Jewish students from attending class, blocking them in their dorm rooms so they couldn't go out. They couldn't use the bathroom. They couldn't eat. They couldn't call their parents. They couldn't call for support. Buildings were being taken over and Jewish students were being harassed, is now bravely standing up to the White House because apparently stopping hate speech and protecting students is a bridge too far. Really? You can't make this stuff up. Now, where was all that righteous indignation from Harvard when Jewish students were being openly targeted and intimidated on their own campus? Where was the grand defense of community values when swastikas and anti-Semitic stickers started showing up near Harvard Hilltill? Silence. And when a university employee was caught on camera tearing down posters of kidnapped Israeli children, some of whom were later found murdered, unfortunately, Harvard couldn't even be bothered to issue a strong condemnation. And let's not forget the Israeli business student who was mobbed and shouted off campus by pro-Palestinian protesters for nothing more than just existing as a Jewish individual. Did Harvard protect him? Of course not. They handed the mob a megaphone and turned a blind eye to the hate. This has got me all riled up. Yes, Harvard's a private institution, But don't let that fool you. They're swimming in federal cash, swimming in it. We're talking billions of tax dollars funneled into a university that can't even be bothered to protect its Jewish students in particular, specifically. That's where the Civil Rights Acts actually come in. When you accept federal funding, you are required. Let me say that again. You are absolutely required by law to provide an environment free from discrimination based on race, based on color, or national origin. And that includes Jewish students. So you know that, Harvard. If Hillsdale College, a small school in Michigan, can stand on its principles and refuse federal dollars to maintain its independence, Harvard has absolutely no excuse. No excuse. You don't get to take the people's money and then claim you're above the law when it comes to protecting the people's children. The people's children. Yes, Jewish children are the people's children. President Alan Garber said, and I quote, "No government, regardless of which party is in power, should dictate what private universities can teach, whom they can admit and hire, and which areas of study and inquiry they can pursue." Oh, really? Oh, that's rich. That's rich coming from a school that happily promotes DEI ideology like it's gospel, censors dissenting voices faster than you can say hate speech, and builds entire departments around gender studies and post-colonial theory, but can't seem to figure out whether torch-wielding anti-Semitic mobs should be allowed to take over the Quad. When Trump steps in and says, hey, maybe the safety of Jewish students matters more than your Marxist book club, Harvard treats it like a full-blown constitutional crisis. Let's be honest here. Let's tell the savage truth. This isn't about academic freedom. It's about academic cowardice. Harvard didn't fight anti-Semitism because it didn't want to. It was too worried about upsetting its activist base and losing cocktail party invites in Cambridge, right? Plus, I believe that there are absolutely professors who are anti-Semitic. But when Trump threatens their precious $2 billion in federal funding, suddenly they're freedom fighters. Now, all of a sudden, the truth is, the savage truth is, President Trump is doing what Harvard should have done months ago, drawing a line in the sand. This isn't about left versus right. This is about right versus wrong. And if protecting Jewish students and a restoring order means ruffling a few Ivy League feathers, then ruffle away, dear Mr. President. Here's a new story. A man was shot dead after resisting arrest. Okay. Now, you know it's not America, unfortunately, unless we have some law and order breakdown. Please roll the footage, Rick, would you?
I'll be out with them. It's a white male, blue shirt, gray pants.
Yes, sir.
This man here is going to get hit. He flipped his car here a minute ago.
All right, I'll get him.
Waving his own thing.
Disregard, I was a truck driver. So, I think it's a black male with a pink shirt.
Come on, buddy.
Step away. The devil, please step away.
Step away. You're
a devil.
What's going on, man?
Please.
What's going on?
In the name of Jesus. In the name of Jesus, watch out.
Hey,
in the name of Jesus, watch out.
Buddy, watch out. You're
going to get hurt. In the name of Jesus, stop, bitch.
Hey,
Jesus, Lord, bye now. Jesus, Lord, bye now. Don't touch me, you're going to die. Next time you touch me, you're going to die. Next time you touch me, you're going to die.
Turn around. Put your hands behind your back. 5-team, Clayton. Send me another unit. He's on foot, going down to Berm. Hey, you gotta go down!
You ain't down! That's Jesus, bitch! That's Jesus, bitch!
Get down on the ground!
Jesus! 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 get you in this.
Here.
Jesus. Okay, let's see. Give me help. Listen.
Get down on the ground now.
Lay down. Lay down. I'm strong, baby. I'm a Jesus lover.
Now, you can hear from my tone that this is going to be another case of here we go again. Another violent criminal resisting arrest, attacking law enforcement, right? Not acquiescing, not following orders, and turning a routine traffic stop into a deadly confrontation. When are they going to learn? What's it going to take? In Ohio, a man named Deshaun Leith physically assaulted, as you saw, a state trooper on the side of the road, stole the patrol car, and took off, forcing police into a high-stakes situation that ended with Leith being shot and killed. Now, let's be clear. This wasn't some peaceful misunderstanding, as so many people are going to or already have begun to start attacking and labeling as. This was an outright assault on law enforcement and a complete disregard for the rule of law, a complete disregard for other people's property, disregard for life, disregard for law and order and rules and policy and decency. But you just wait. Some activists, some nonprofit, right? Somewhere is already warming up their hashtags, ready to blame the cops instead of the actual assailant, the actual criminal that you saw in the video. Let's talk about the obvious. This trooper was doing his job, simply doing his job. He put on the uniform to protect and serve, not to get blindsided, not to get beaten or carjacked by someone with zero respect for authority. This is exactly why our officers are on edge and communities across the country are less safe because of a Deshaun. Criminals have been emboldened by years of soft on crime policies under the Biden administration and yes, by Obama as well. Anti-police rhetoric and a justice system more interested in equity than in justice. And we've allowed the narrative to shift from obey the law to question the cops. And this is the results. And this will continue to be the results. We're going to continue to see more dead people, more dead criminals. It's not just dangerous for law enforcement. It's just all around deadly. If you're more outraged than the outcome, about the outcome, than the criminal actions that led to it, then you're part of the problem. That's a savage truth. Okay. Americans want their streets back. They want to feel safe. They want to be safe. We want our officers respected. We want them protected. We don't want them attacked. They are our loved ones, okay? We're married to them. We're friends with them. We are neighbors with these people. They're our relatives. They are members of the community. And we want leaders who will defend law and order, not excuse chaos in the name of political correctness. The savage truth is when you assault a police officer and steal a squad car, there are going to be consequences, period. That's not injustice. That's just simply reality. And if we don't get back to enforcing it, we're going to keep watching our society unravel. One ambush, one simple traffic stop at a time. What a shame. Here's something else here. This is about the family of Anthony Carmelo, who actually hosts a press conference. And I'm sure a lot of you have seen and or heard about this, but we just need to get into this a little bit because there's a lot of outrage. So I've seen some shameless press conferences in my day. Believe me, I live in Minneapolis. Okay, so I really have seen a whole lot of really bad, shameless press conferences. But what the family of Carmelo Anthony just put out in Texas is beyond disgusting. It was vile. It was manipulative and an open slap in the face to justice. Let's break it down. Carmelo Anthony, a high school student, stabbed a 17-year-old Austin Metcalf an unarmed teen in the heart during a school track meet. This wasn't an accident. This wasn't self-defense. This was a cold-blooded killing, and the facts are as clear as day. But instead of a courtroom focused on truth, we now have a legal team whose entire strategy is to poison the jury pool with race-baiting garbage and identity politics. Simple as that. It's just that simple. It's just that clear. That's it. Their entire defense is find someone who hates white people enough to ignore the facts. Go ahead and play the video.
Next Generation Action Network from the beginning has respected the loss of life. No matter our opinion of it, we have kept our opinion close. We have not attacked. We have not shared the information that was shared with us about Austin Metcalf, because we respect the dignity of life and loss. And all I'm going to say, so it don't be asked later, is that was disrespectful and just shows you all the character. He was not invited. He knows that it's inappropriate to be near this family. I want to start off this press conference to say something as a deep note. A deep note that I can tell America. What we've seen at the beginning of this press conference, of the father being at this press conference, these are my words. Don't quote anybody. Is a disrespect to the dignity of his son.
And the circus reached full insanity with the press conference, okay? You think at the very least that the spokesperson, Dominique Alexander, would show some decency, some remorse, or maybe even acknowledge the victim's family, but no. Oh, no, 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 no. Instead, this guy opens up by attacking Austin Metcalf's father. Attacking the victim's father. He accuses this grieving man who had the grace to publicly forgive his son's killer. Oh, literally forgave him of being disrespectful and disgracing his own child's memory. That's not just tone deaf. It's a borderline. And matter of fact, it's not even borderline evil. It is flat out evil. They threw Jeff Metcalf out of the press conference because how dare the father of the victim expect to be treated with basic human decency? Oh my gosh, the arrogance and the cruelty of this is absolutely mind-boggling. It's staggering. And it's all a part of the plan. Silence the victim, elevate the criminal, and twist the narrative until truth becomes unrecognizable. Let's call this what it is. Let's tell the savage truth in this moment. Racial manipulation as a legal defense. They're not defending Carmelo Anthony's actions. They can't because the facts aren't there. They are airtight. This case is airtight. So instead, they're playing the ugliest card in the deck. You know the one. They're trying to smear the victim, imply some kind of hidden wrongdoing without evidence, and hope that they can seat one activist juror who sees race before justice. Now, that's just not shameful. It's dangerous. And like I said, it's absolutely evil, because if this is just the justice system itself, if this becomes a rigged game where the facts don't matter, only the skin color of defendant and the victim, then we don't have a justice system at all. And that in itself is extremely scary. We have a politically weaponized courtroom. And let me tell you something, savages, Americans are absolutely sick of it. This is about more than one tragic murder. It's about whether we're going to let truth and justice be torn apart by activists and race hustlers who exploit grief. They exploit division and tragedy for power. Carmelo Anthony stabbed an unarmed teenager to death. I'm going to say that again. because this is Savage Truth. Carmelo Anthony stabbed an unarmed teenager to death. There is no justification there. There is no excuse, and there is absolutely no reason the family of the victim should be villainized in this sick public relations campaign. The press conference was an absolute disgrace. The legal strategy is a disgrace. And if this country still believes in law and order, and I believe it does, the jury won't be fooled, because justice isn't about race. It's about right and wrong. And this was dead wrong. Unfortunately, it was deadly wrong. And moving on. So there's a new trend out there, Rick. I don't know if you've heard about it. Kind of cringy, but we're going to talk about it. So there are two terms we're going to discuss today. Okay, folks. One of them is called hot wifing. Okay. And the other one is a partners. Now we're going to break this down for you, because there's some things going on out there in the world that I'm either getting old or I have just really gotten to be really tight, because what's going on in society, I almost don't want to even leave the house anymore. It's crazy. But let's talk about this most disturbing trend creeping into our culture under the guise of modern relationships. It's called hot wifing. Now, for those fortunate enough not to know this, good for you. I'm unfortunately going to break that right now, because this is the practice where a married woman has sex with other men, sometimes with her husband's permission, most of the time, sometimes with his participation. And it's being sold as empowering or evolved. Okay. Falls under the definition of progressive. Here's a hot wife explaining the lifestyle. Go ahead and play the video, Rick. Ugh.
What is a hot wife? Hello, everybody. I am Jade Lee, also known as Hot Wife Jade Lee. Thank you for joining and viewing my channel, where I like to talk about the lifestyle. And I believe that knowledge is power. And the more people that understand the lifestyle will not necessarily join the lifestyle, because the lifestyle is not for everybody, but at least be a little bit more accepting to know that just because something's not for them doesn't mean it's not for everybody else. Big question I always get on any of my platforms and my lives is, what is a hot wife? So I myself am a hot wife, among other things, which I will go over those other things in other videos as well. But what is a hot wife? A hot wife is a female partner of a committed couple, whether it's married or just a committed couple. They don't have to necessarily be married, where the female partner has extracurricular activities with other people with the encouragement and consent from her partner. There are lots of different dynamics in the hot wife space, whether the male partner is present during some of those extracurricular activities. Sometimes they're recorded. Sometimes they're doing like a video call with him. Sometimes he's not present at all. And then they just go back and they talk about the experience later together as a connecting point afterwards. So there's lots of different dynamics. Never is one same for the other. And that's what's great about the lifestyle, is there's no set rules or boundaries that you have to follow. It's whatever works for you.
Folks, let's call this what it is. Okay. Moral rot dressed up in Instagram hashtags and TikTok therapy speak. Okay. This is not progress. That's not what this is. It's a collapse of values. Okay. It's studies and common sense both show that having multiple sexual partners is destructive to the emotional, physical, and spiritual health of a marriage. That's the actual truth. Okay. Trust is broken. Intimacy is eroded. And what's left is a hollow shell of what was supposed to be a sacred covenant. That is the beauty of marriage, right? Of the coming together. And as if that weren't bad enough, we've got another trend called a partners, okay? Where married couples live in separate homes, even in separate cities, all in the name of independence and personal growth. Let's play that video.
So I had a call with a lady this past week, and she really wanted me to address this issue. Living apart together. She's a mature woman. She has lived her life. And she never again wants to share her home with a man. But she does want a committed long-term monogamous relationship. So in her dating, she is telling these men that she wants a relationship that is living apart but together. So I did some research on this. There was actually a study that has been done on this in the Journal of Family Psychology. And what they found was that couples who live apart often report higher levels of happiness and less conflict compared to those who cohabitate. There's a lot of people that want to maintain their individual lifestyles and really maintain their individual personal space. They don't want to have to clean up after another person. They don't want to have to cook for another person. They don't want to have to do their laundry. And they just want more alone time and quiet time. And there's nothing wrong with that. So I'm curious if this is something that you would do. Do you want to get married again one day and cohabitate together?
Are you kidding me? Marriage isn't a part-time job or a weekend hobby, folks. It's a commitment, a lifetime commitment to building a better life together. It's about making the other person better, right? The whole point of marriage is unity, not two people playing roommates with benefits. It's emotional dancing disguised as sophistication. It's not independence. And let's be real. Let's tell the truth. This stuff isn't happening in a vacuum. These trends are being fed by a culture that celebrates selfishness and convenience over sacrifice and responsibility. And what's the result? Lonely, broken people chasing fulfillment in things that only lead to more emptiness, right? You can think I'm a prude all you want. This is not the deal, okay? This is not cool. We've strayed so far from values that actually build strong families and lasting relationships. We've strayed from faithfulness and accountability and unity that now open infidelity and absentee marriages are being marketed as healthy. That's how backwards and turned inside out and upside down we are right now. And the worst part is there's an entire media machine out there applauding this. But here's the truth. The savage truth is this is the wreckage of a society that's forgotten what love and commitment really mean. Marriage isn't supposed to be easy, folks. That's why everyone shouldn't do it. But it's supposed to be exclusive. It's supposed to be enduring, and it is rooted in love and trust. These trends aren't forward-thinking. They are backwards. They are broken and tearing at the foundation of the family, tearing at the foundation of our very society. It's time we stop glorifying dysfunction and start defending the institutions that actually make civilization possible, makes it great. And that, my friends, is the savage truth. Now, Rick, I don't know if you realize, but last episode I was in stars. This one, I'm in stripes. You know, your girl, she just loves America, right? It just permeates. I'm not even trying to do it on purpose. It just kind of happens that way. But let's lead out with another episode of Savage Soldiers. Please like, share, subscribe, and leave a positive review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. And remember, as always, to be bold, be strong, be faithful, be true. Till next time, I'm Cicely.
The Savage Truth with Cicely Davis is a production of Front Page Magazine and the David Horowitz Freedom Center. Reproduction of this podcast without express written consent is prohibited.